Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello there and a very warm welcome to today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick and I'll be with you for the next half hour. In a few moments I'll be shining the spotlight on the Synod for Africa by bringing you the personal impressions of one archbishop from Ghana and the story of a Nigerian woman who leads 15 million Catholic women in her nation. Well, thanks so much for joining me once again. Ever since the 4th of October, the Second General Assembly of the Synod of Bishops for Africa brought together over 200 bishops plus experts, both religious and lay, from across this continent and beyond, to discuss the themes of reconciliation, justice and peace in the Vatican itself. Among the bishops present was the Archbishop of Accra in Ghana, Gabriel Charles Palmer Buckle. He was kind enough to sit down with me in our studios here towards the end of the synod, which ends on Sunday, 25th of October, and comment on this great meeting.
This is my very first experience, and I like to make it clear immediately that it is the second special assembly on Africa of the Synod of Bishops. And from that point of view, what really impressed me was to understand what a Synod of Bishops is. It is the whole church gathered together around the successor of St. Peter, the Pope, who invited us to come and sit and think about Africa. And of those who were invited, apart from them being overwhelmingly from Africa, there are delegates from the United States of America, from Latin America, from Asia, from Oceania, from the Middle East, and from Europe. And so the first thing that struck me was this sense of ecclesial communion. The whole church is gathered together to think about Africa. And from the sharing that went on from these delegates, they made us aware of the fact that they were looking forward to results that would come out of this assembly, the synod, even for themselves also. Archbishop Wilton Gregory from the United States of America, representing the U.S. CBC, told
Catholic
us
Bishops Conference.
Right of America, also told us clearly that when you talk about reconciliation, when you talk about justice, the Catholic Church in America has the same mission to its people also there. Then the bishop who came from Latin America, representing Latin America, he also told us they also have racial integration to worry about. They have social inequalities that call for justice, call for reconciliation. The bishops who came from Asia and Oceania, they told us similar stories. And even Europe, we were very surprised to hear from Europe that even Europe is still battling today with issues of reconciliation. They've had to do so after the World War. Today they have to do it on a cultural level, on a level of justice, particularly with reference to migrants who are coming in here, most of our young people from Africa coming. So it gives you immediately to understand that the problem of reconciliation, justice and peace is not only for Africa, and that this synod can come out with results that would benefit the entire church. The second thing that I've enjoyed is the sense of being encouraged as an African bishop, because the Holy Father in his opening mass said it, that Africa is the spiritual lung of the world. He didn't say even the Catholic Church. He said just Africa. And he went on to say, however, Africa is running the risk of being infected by two viruses, which we must do everything we can to prevent. The first one, he said, was practical materialism, which has underpinnings of relativism and also very nihilistic sort of cultures, the culture of death. And he said, this is coming from Europe and the developed world into Africa. We have to do something about it.
The Western world.
The Western world, he said.
Not just Europe.
You know, Europe and, you know, the first world, so-called the Western world. Then he talked about the second virus, which is religious fundamentalism, that has underpinnings political interests, also seeking to destabilize this continent that is very religious but has always had a very peaceful coexistence. Now, from what the Pope said, from all that we have heard from cardinals in the Roman dicasteries and from our own delegates and participants, I got the impression that, or at least I'm convinced, that this is not a synod sitting and looking at Africa as a sick patient needing, you know, help or needing healing medication, but rather as parents who are seated with their young adult son or daughter who is full of creativity, who is full of vitality, who is growing, has idealisms, and should be helped to face the challenges that are coming in order to become a very fruitful, you know, to have a fruitful future. Because Africa is blessed with a lot of vocations. The Catholic population in Africa since 1978 has tripled. And from 55 million, it's now about 164 million, which is 17.5% of the population in Africa. Then when you talk about priests have increased from about 23,000 to about 36,000 or so. The religious, consecrated men and women have also increased exponentially. Seminarians have increased, catechists, name it, Catholic schools in Africa, Catholic media in Africa, Catholic social services in Africa play such a major role. So as a synod, we have met to see this young adult continent growing and to see how to help this country deal with issues of reconciliation, justice, and peace. So I've enjoyed my stay here. There's been a lot of, call it, communication amongst us which would not go into the papers. When you go to any meeting or any synod, you are enriched by the, you know, very personal relationship and interpersonal relationships that can never be put down on paper. We'll leave here with all these and, of course, great expectations of what the Pope's post-synodal exhortation will be.
Well, what are the issues you hope will be highlighted by the Pope in the post-synodal apostolic exhortation?
I think he's going to give us an agenda for the next 10 years or so to work hard on issues of reconciliation. Reconciliation with God, that means evangelization. Reconciliation with ourselves, that means learning to accept who we are, created by God, put in Africa for a purpose. We have a mission there. Reconciliation individually with our own selves. One would say feeling good in our own skins and learning to offer what we have to offer. And then reconciliation amongst tribes, ethnic groupings, reconciliation on the political plane, reconciliation on the intellectual plane, and the rest. So I believe that reconciliation is going to be the agenda. In fact, it has already started as the agenda of the African church, you know, where we have to work very hard to make sure that Christ, who is our reconciliation, Christ, who is our justice, Christ, who is our peace, really permeates our lives, our social, our political, our economic, and our individual lives, in order to make the church truly salt of the earth and light of the world. So I am expecting a tall order from the Holy Father himself.
Do you think the Western world understands Africa at all? What's your perception on this?
I think the Western world has been misinformed too much about Africa. I don't know whether it's because of the dark skin that we have, that they only treasure hearing bad news about Africa. For instance, the impression is that there is war in Africa. There are as many as 56 countries in Africa, even though officially they say 53. And of the 56, only about 12 have different forms of conflict going on. Only 4 of them have real wars going on. And everybody thinks that the whole of Africa is at war, one. Number 2, It is true that we have diseases like malaria, like tuberculosis, like HIV and AIDS, which is has been rising for quite a while. It is really true. But in a continent, if I'm not mistaken, that has a population of about, I wish I could say the exact population, the tendency is to exaggerate how much sickness and disease are in Africa. It is true there are. We cannot close our eyes to it. Then there are social issues in Africa. But tell me, which continent does not have HIV AIDS patients, does not have tuberculosis patients, does not have, unemployment on the rise, does not have interracial or tribal, conflicts and the rest? Which continent does not have political, misgivings?
Yes, but the images that reach us from Africa express extreme violence, or are very strong anyway.
That's what people tend to bring out. I mean, I've been in the United States of America. If you went to America, you went to New York, where once in a while there's a shootout, or even Washington, D.C., and took out a picture and said, that is America, that would be exaggerating, am I right? Or if you went into Latin America, you went into Brazil, went into some of their favelas and just took pictures of children eating from the dung heap and the rest, or in the Philippines, does that make Philippines or does that make Brazil? So what we are trying to say is that you come to Africa and you would see that the media, unfortunately, has exaggerated what we have as our negative parts. But we have a lot of very positive parts, and that is, it's coming out very, very gradually. Let me give you a very funny example. In soccer, or football, as they call it here, in Europe, how many African players are playing here in Europe and are playing so very well? Come to think of it, they did not have all the facilities that their European counterparts had when they were kids, and yet they've gone on to excel. Look at how many blacks are excelling all over the place. Nobody says Africans are excelling. Kofi Annan, African. Boutros-Ghali before him, an African. Let me take it this way. Usain Bolt, the fastest man on earth, is of African descent. Or if you go to the United States of America, most of their athletes are of African descent. Not only that, entertainers of African descent. When you go into the sciences, quite a lot of Africans are doing a lot of work over there. So I believe it's getting time that the world woke up about what Africa would be able to contribute. And maybe as a punchline, you have President Obama, Barack Hussein Obama in the United States of America. Well, whether we like it or not, America voted him because America thought he was the right person. He came to Ghana. He encouraged us very much. What he said was, you can. Yes, you can. That has been his motto. He told us plainly we shouldn't expect anybody to come and do it for us. Our destinies are in our own hands, in the hands of the youth, in the hands of the politicians, in the hands of the traditional leaders, in the hands of our people. And he said, we must do something about it. What he said was, if you are doing something about it, you can be sure you have an ally in America. So he encourages us to be self-reliant, to work towards self-sufficiency, and then we can look elsewhere for help. So what better news can there come from Africa?
At this synod, you've been discussing reconciliation. Now, Africans often tend to pinpoint the pain connected to the colonial legacy, putting the blame on Westerners for all that happened then. Is that still so, do you think, in Africa? Or
there are historical facts that we cannot close our eyes to. Some of the woes we have today are because of our colonial past and our neo-colonial geopolitical interest even today. Ghana exports gold. Ghana does not determine the price of gold. How is that possible? Britain takes the gold, refines the gold, makes it into jewelry. Britain determines how much the gold must cost. Ghana exports wood. Ghana does not determine the price of its wood. Germany, America gets the wood, refines it into, you know, call it a TVB or anything at all, and they determine the price. I mean, this is unfair. So we cannot close our eyes to the fact that there are neo-colonialist interference with our development. But I don't also think we can waste our time doing the blame game. We have what it takes still more to do very well. I mean, it's a continent whose resources are still there. Natural resources, we still have so much of it, we don't even know what to do with it. Human resource is coming out. We have them. And so I believe with good governance and being very watchful over what I may call the Pope's call for the two viruses, we should be able to stand on our own very well. I have had reason once on the other time to say that in the third millennium is going to be for the third world. And I'm very convinced about it. And this synod gives me hope to know that the third world has a mission towards the so-called first world, and if any, the second world. So we are ready to do our bit. We've been doing it. It has never been acknowledged. We are going to do more.
Is there anything you want to add?
Oh, if there is anything at all, I would say that migration was one of the issues we dealt with. And it's worrisome to see how many of our young people are so fascinated by what is happening in the first world, and all of them are trying to pull into the, you know, first world. We've been discussing migration. You cannot stop people from migrating because it is a right. You know, it's a human right. But what we have come to say is that young people who are very qualified professionally and everything, we want to encourage them to stay at home. And we are, call it this way, getting involved with our governments to make sure that they create an environment where their young people, qualified professionals, will stay at home and contribute to the building up of our nations in Africa. That is a fact. Then if there are other young people who want to expatriate because, you know, a person must be free to live anywhere he or she feels comfortable, we want them to do so with the right papers and documentation so that they don't go creating a problem for themselves by risks of their lives, for their families, for the countries where they live, Africa, and also to the new countries where they are going because of this unfortunate xenophobism that is now creeping in, even into Europe, who are supposed to be those who wrote out the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Now, when it comes to the human rights of so-called illegal immigrants and refugees, Europe is becoming very, very xenophobic. It's worrisome. And that is where I believe, as a Christian church, as a Catholic church, we're talking with our brother bishops in these various countries to lobby and advocate for a very human face in dealing with these illegalities. You know, laws should not come that contradict the same Universal Declaration of Human Rights, you know.
You were listening there to the Archbishop of Accra, Ghana, Gabriel Charles Palmer Buckle. Another of the participants I met up with at the African Synod was Felicia Onyabo, the national president of the Catholic Women's Organization of Nigeria. I caught up with her in the Synod Hall and asked her to sit down with me in our studios here. So be sure to stay tuned to find out more. A word of warning. I'd like to begin with a surprise recording from our Vatican Radio archives when a pope visited Felicia's nation, addressing her organization. It was the 14th of February 1982, the place Kaduna, Nigeria, when Pope John Paul II addresses the Catholic women of this vast nation.
I am very happy to greet you, the leaders of the Catholic Women's Organization of Nigeria. Although I have met leaders of the National Laity Council, in which you are also included, my special encounter with you is justified by the unique place which you occupy in the family, in the church, and in the society. I should confess to you that your bishops, during their ad limina visit, said to me that you are very strong.
The Catholic Women Organization is very, very dynamic. It's a force, because you can imagine how many we are. We have professional women, women in uniform, nurses, doctors, in fact, every walk of life, they are there, including the unemployed and housewives. They really have a voice. That is, within the church, they are not marginalized. Some distinct roles that women are not expected to play in the church. So, but whatever is their own role, they play it well.
A force, these Catholic women, who were represented well over 20 years later at the Synod for Africa by Felicia Onyabo, current president of this organization, first established in 1975 following the Civil War of 1970, an organization which has grown over the years and is now 15 million strong. That means 10% of the population of Nigeria. Felicia does this from Abuja, Nigeria's capital, located in the very centre of a vast territory where, as the international media relates, in the mainly Muslim north, Christians often have a tough time standing up to fundamentalist groups. But as this Catholic woman, who holds down a high-powered job in the fiscal policy department of the Ministry of Finance, explains, not all Muslims create problems. Take my boss, for example. He's a Muslim and was extremely understanding. When I asked to attend this Synod for Africa in Rome, despite already having taken all my yearly leave.
What he did really surprised me. After reading the letter, he shook my hand. Say, yes, we are indeed proud to have you with us. In fact, you have my blessing. You can go.
Felicia is mother to four girls and two boys and grandmother of five, and tells me that her husband, a businessman and politician, is proud of her too. No wonder, as beyond her professional and family chores, she also finds the time to head this army of Catholic women through what is today the largest single non-governmental organization throughout Africa. I asked her about her concerns for the Catholic women in her nation. What are the issues that concern you most as women?
Evangelization. With the Beijing Declaration of 1995, women empowerment came into play. We had to include entrepreneurship. Like now, we have some microfinance. We give loans to women who don't have small amounts as soft loan without interest. If women were given the opportunity to make decisions. I mean, if women are given the chance, the country will be less corrupt, because I don't know of any woman who will just go out of her way to become corrupt. No woman will like to bring shame to her family because of her children, because of her husband, and all those people who have been bearing the name she picked up by marriage. In fact, it is hard to get a woman that is corrupt. And the few that found themselves in that situation, go and check it. It was pressure from their husbands or their brothers that got them into that corruption. So I believe that if women are given a chance, they will do very well, because they have a lot to protect.
I knew that during the Synod for Africa, the suffering of women and children in war-torn areas had been discussed at length, so I asked her what her reaction to this was.
Women and children are the most vulnerable group when it comes to war, They are the people who lose their husbands. They are the people who get raped. They are the people who suffer all kinds of hardship during these wars. It's lamentable what women go through. If only men will just think about what can happen to their wives and children before going to beat the war drum. Even if there is no war, this HIV pandemic is the women that bear the brunt.
These Catholic women from Nigeria seem to have an answer to everything. They even foot the bills for mass weddings.
They organize mass wedding, you know, foot the bill. Because so many people, you find out that a lot of people in the Catholic Church will just get married and they become fallen Catholics. They don't go to sacraments anymore. They start living with their wives after the traditional wedding. So that is why the CWO, Catholic Women Organization, organizes mass wedding. About 20 couples, 30 couples will be wedded in one day. And the Catholic Women Organization will organize everything.
So flowers, reception.
Reception, cakes. No, they bring everything. They cook and bring food, drinks, everything, just to give people the opportunity to get married in the church.
While chatting to me, Felicia also pinpointed issues regarding moral decadence in her nation.
It started immediately after the Civil War. Government took over schools that were mission schools. With that went moral education. What is the result? We've had 40 years of moral decadence. 40 years. From 1970 till now. Children are just growing without moral education, except what maybe you taught them in the home, which is not enough. Right now, the Nigerian youth can only look up to people we call the 419. People who made their money from dubious means, and they are flaunting their wealth. And so for children, it is very, very misleading. They see these people as their mentor. Oh, he drives a Jeep. Oh, he built a big house. Oh, he is married to a graduate. So the Nigerian youth of today is looking up to people you will not even like to associate with. But for the youth, in their plastic minds, these people appear to be very successful. So that is why the Catholic Women Organization has decided, let us build a school and start from somewhere. At least this school will have civic responsibilities as a curricula, as well as moral education, designated to the girl child. And the girl child will benefit from it because they eventually will become mothers of tomorrow.
Do you share your concerns when you're working with other churches at all? With other Christian churches? Do you have meetings with Muslims?
I have it in my action plan to collaborate with them because I found out that we have basically the same interest. For example, 2 years ago when the abortion bill was to be passed, we collaborated with Muslim women and we sent our memorandum each. And we were able to stall it. They couldn't move. You know. So there are a lot of things, a lot of values we have in common. And we can find common ground.
And warm thanks there to Felicia Onyabo, National President of the Catholic Women's Organization of Nigeria. And that brings me up to time. I do hope you enjoyed this broadcast. Thanks for listening. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.
Laudator Jesus Christus.